This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, September 23rd, 2011. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. The Susan G. Komen Pink Ribbon Luncheon will be held on Thursday, September 29th, from 11:30 a.m. until 1 p.m. at the Springdale Convention Center. This themed fundraiser, Give Breast Cancer the Boot, will feature a fall boot preview, silent auction items, and music from recording artist Candy Coburn. Tickets and more information are available at komenozark.org or 750-PINK.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, we try to preview as much of a busy weekend as we can. The Aerials drive over from Eureka Springs to discuss tomorrow's Eureka Palooza that will benefit Clear Springs School. Jacqueline Froelich goes in the opposite direction, driving to Eureka to meet some participants in a studio tour that began this morning. And Arkansalsa comes to Fayetteville. Blast sets down on the stage at the Alma Performing Arts Center.
But first, an international effort to encourage alternatives to fossil fuels will be marked in Northwest Arkansas. Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas reports that Moving Planet Day this weekend lands in Fayetteville. She begins her report with an explanation from one of the local event's organizers.
Moving Planet is the third annual 350 event. It's an international phenomenon. For instance, last year, the same event was called 10-10-10. They're not always called the same thing. They're the brainchild of Bill McKippen and 350.org. There were over 7,000 events in over 200 countries last year.
That's Joanna Pollock. She is one of the organizers of Fayetteville's Moving Planet Day. She says that Moving Planet Day is a time for global citizens to have a unified voice to the powers that be, that movement away from fossil fuel infrastructure and moving towards renewable energy sources is needed. The organization that started these days 3 years ago is 350.org. The name of the nonprofit has a symbolic significance.
350.org is an international organization that does a lot of lobbying work and public awareness about climate change as the pivotal issue of our time in human history. The reason for the number 350 is because leading scientists believe, like James Hansen and others, Bill McKibben, wanted to highlight that 350 is the parts per million of carbon in the atmosphere that is believed to be a safe level, so that ecological systems and biodiversity will not be threatened, that we will continue to be able to live as we have lived for millions of years.
Do you know what level we're at now?
We are at around 392 and climbing, so we've already passed that safe level. But if we don't get back down to that 350 parts per million, then our planet is really becoming a new place ecologically and one that we're not necessarily adapted for.
Joanna says that the 350 days are very similar to Earth Day, but differ in that they aim to highlight the crisis point that has been reached concerning climate change and disruption. The fact that these events fall in the fall is not necessarily to set it apart from Earth Day. But there is some strategy behind it.
Typically, it has to do with national legislative cycles as well as international. Every year in December, for quite some time, there's an international gathering, you know, and that happens in different places. This year, it's going to be in Durban, South Africa. So trying to really, it's a citizen's time to have a voice right before the international treaty talks occur in December.
While this is the third annual 350 Day in Fayetteville, there is more collaboration this year than in previous years. Numerous organizations at the University of Arkansas are involved, such as the Applied Sustainability Center, the Office for Campus Sustainability, and the Student Sustainability Council. Other organizations, such as the Omni Center for Peace, Justice, and Equality, as well as the Bike Coalition of the Ozarks, are also involved.
It sounds like this year might be a little bit bigger than last year.
We're hoping so. We're really, you know, one of the things about, you know, the last 2 years' events were fantastic, you know, and they were a lot of fun. But it was really the people that attended the events were the people that are really active in the sustainability movement. And we're hoping this year that we can get more people there who are curious about sustainability, who are, you know, are starting to think and realize that this is an important issue that I need to become more involved with and learn more about.
The event will largely take place on the Old Main Lawn at the University of Arkansas, but it begins at the Farmers Market. Dan Dean, with the Bike Coalition of the Ozarks, has organized a bike ride to encourage participants to get moving. He details the route riders will take.
I think what we're going to do, and this is subject to change depending on the crowd that shows up, and I think what we're going to do is going to ride east on Mountain out to College and turn left on College and go north for a few blocks and be nice and visible. People can see what's going on. And then we're going to turn left on Dixon and go west down Dixon all the way to the Skull Creek Trail. And we'll go north on Skull Creek Trail and then turn left and head up towards campus. So it's about a mile ride. Should take, 20 minutes, depending on. We'll go as slow as we need to for the abilities of the riders, and nobody will be left behind. So.
Upon arrival on the lawn, guests will find green businesses and nonprofits armed with information. There will be live music from local artists, like Guy Ames and Dan Dean himself. Children's activities, such as a storytelling of the Lorax, lessons on the native trees growing on the lawn, and other things to encourage appreciation of nature will take place. There will also be a free cycle. Participants may bring gently used items to donate and shop through the items of others for free. Speakers from the local sustainability movement will also be present, such as Michael Lawley with the Treadwell Institute, Michelle Hossel, and Uvalde Lindsay,
who has worked really hard and stood up for, as a representative in Arkansas, issues that are near and dear to our hearts in the sustainability community, like protecting our water and promoting energy efficiency legislation, like property assessed clean energy in the state and the renewable energy feed-in tariff. So policies that would really help promote some of these changes that we need to wean ourselves off of fossil fuels in the state.
Joanna says that around the world, the type of moving planet event will vary. Some will be similar to this one, while others might just be a bike ride, or, in larger cities, might be on a much grander scale. But the goal remains the same: the world's citizens coming together to encourage movement towards action to reduce climate change. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. With me is Teresa Maurer, our slow food representative. It's been a while since you've been here, but welcome back.
Yeah, it has been. Not that we haven't been doing things. We had quite a successful tomato tasting, but now I'm here to talk to you about some fall type things.
And one of them begins next week, and it's called Dine Out for a Cause?
Yes. Any excuse to dine out, right?
Right.
Well, this is the National Week for Dine Out for No Kid Hungry, and it's September 18th through 24th, and it's sponsored by a nonprofit organization called Share Our Strength. And locally, Bordino's is participating, and I'm sure there's a number of other restaurants in the area. And there is a website where you can actually go and see, you know, other places in Arkansas or Northwest Arkansas that will be joining the list. So during that week, the 18th through the 24th, part of the proceeds will go towards this nonprofit with the specific goal of cutting back in some way on childhood hunger.
When you think about how much food is produced in this country, when you look at the statistics, I mean, there shouldn't be anybody hungry.
That's right. And even Arkansas and Washington County are right up there. So I think any effort, one like this where our for-profit businesses are contributing part of their proceeds as well as a number of other local efforts, this is just a really nice kind of fun way to go out and be able to know that part of your dinner money is actually going to help somebody who maybe didn't get dinner.
It's the 18th through the 24th.
That's right.
Strength.org.
Strength.org. It's an easy website to remember, and there is a real obvious place where you can click and get to a map that'll show you the restaurants that are participating.
And many of our local restaurants are buying local food and are buying from local farmers.
They are. That's increasing. And we actually hope to have some efforts where we're recognizing those folks as well. And we've really seen local food as part of the overall Northwest Arkansas economic development effort. I mean, I think there's a number of us that really want to see Northwest Arkansas as a destination for art and food and music, all those things working together.
And, you know, the phrase slow food is not that unheard of anymore. I've been to Kansas City and Colorado and gotten in conversation with someone, and slow food rolls right off their tongue. And these are not foodies. These are not people in the industry. but they're aware.
Right. Yeah. It's more of a really a consumer and chef kind of led movement. And I still do get the, do you mean crockpot cooking thing? But less so. It is getting to be more recognized as a phrase, you know, a time to take time together to enjoy the diversity of food, but also Slow Food is working on access issues. So having food not be appreciated only by the people of middle or high income, but also have access to food, really good food, by low-income people as well.
Strength.org is where you can find out about the Share Our Strength. It's 18th through 24th. And next week, you're going to come back and we're going to talk about a couple of area markets that have been recognized.
That's it. That's
okay.
Right.
Thanks, Teresa.
Thank you.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Mr. Negrejeda.
And with us in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Alex Abrams. He's Assistant Sports Editor for Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
You're working on a, well, I guess have worked on a story that will be in Sunday's morning news. It's an interesting prospect.
Mm-hmm.
Kids play high school football, and they get hurt. And the question is,
who pays for it? I mean, you know, when you go out there to a football practice, you know, you look around. And with football, it's not a matter of if you're going to get hurt. It's a matter of when you're going to get hurt. And a lot of times people don't realize at a football game, you know, kid tears his ACL or he breaks his leg. Somebody has to pay for that. And it's not always the parents. You know, a lot of times the parents' health insurance will cover most of it. But individual schools will have a secondary insurance that picks up some of the tab. But then for those kids that don't have any health insurance whatsoever, our Kids First sometimes picks up that insurance.
I thought about that.
So there's a and even when a parent's health insurance picks it up, it won't necessarily cover all of the physical therapy for it. So there's a mother I spoke to that's in the story that her kid has, you know, torn his MCL twice and has, you know, broken his ankle, and she's paid $7,500 out of pocket just in the last 4 years for his physical therapy. So you know, when it comes to football, there's sometimes going to be a tab to pay.
Did you find out is there someone that school districts have that help parents walk through this, or are parents really kind of, they have to take the lead?
You know, I mean, before they go out there, the kids go out there, the school has all their insurance information as far as do you have insurance, do you not, who's your insurance with, and they carry that. You know, Fayetteville High School, when they travel on the road, they carry a big book with them, so in case a kid gets injured and has to go to the hospital, they know what insurance is taken care of. That said, though, they don't really speak a lot to the parents as far as what insurance do you have? Is this enough coverage and whatnot? A lot of school officials feel like that's not their place to tell the parents, you know, what kind of coverage do you need? And especially in today's economy where parents are getting laid off or maybe money is tight, they don't want to kind of overstep their bounds and tell them, hey, you need to get insurance. That said, if somebody asks, they will tell them, hey, you know, football is a violent sport. Kids are going to get injured. You might want to have some kind of coverage. Or in the case of like in Springdale High School, you know, there where there's a lot of kids that, you know, their parents might not have health insurance. If they know that, they'll try to get them on Our Kids First to make sure that at least they have some sort of coverage.
Yeah, I mean, puts a whole new perspective on watching 15, 16-year-olds run into each other at high speed.
Yeah. I hadn't really given it a thought. I mean, I figured, you know, parents probably had health insurance, and you know, your kid could get hurt in a sport where you're basically ramming into someone else.
Right. This will be in Sunday's paper?
Yes, it will be.
All right. Alex, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Right now, 16 artists are waiting for you in their studios in Eureka Springs. All will be working on their latest creations, of course, but they will drop their brushes, tools, and chalk to talk about their vision and process. All part of the 6th Annual Artist Studio Tour taking place today through Sunday. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich provides a preview.
A creek flows down Mill Hollow, welcoming you to Fire Ohm Earth Studio, where Lorna and Craig Trigg Hirsch create pottery, sculpture, percussion, and wind instruments. The beautiful 15-acre retreat center features a spring-fed pond, several sweat lodges, guest cottage, a meditation labyrinth, lots of woodland trails. A restored cedar log lodge features a studio in the lower level, a movement and music studio on the middle floor, and the top floor is for resting. The place is filled with artifacts, beautiful pottery, and musical instruments.
It's called a frame drum. or a hoop drum. It's one of the oldest. Women used these, a hoop with a skin, to harvest wheat. So they would hold it flat with the open side facing up and put the wheat in and bounce it on the bottom, and the chaff would separate from the wheat.
Lorna Trigg is a potter but loves to paint birds especially, and adorns her handmade drums with inked images of flying creatures and other iconography.
And I'm originally from South Africa, but have lived in the United States for about 26 years and have been interested in dance and drum all my life. When I came to America, I got to drum. In Africa, the women dance, they don't drum. And I got to learn with a master drummer from Senegal and became really, really fascinated with the story of the drum and the history of the drum, and found out that the drum is a very early women's instrument.
She met her husband, Craig Hirsch, at a Renaissance fair. He's a flute builder. She fell in love with him and the entire scene and started crafting drums out of clay.
But then the clay drums expanded into looking at wooden drums. I now build in maple frames, always natural skins, goat, sheepskin, calfskin, fishskin. Sturgeon is from Egypt and traditional on a drum head. So I use fishskin on my Middle Eastern dumbeks, which make them really sound very Middle Eastern. I build baudrons, Celtic baudrons, which are also a hoop drum.
Lorna builds drums from many traditions, and they match Craig's beautifully carved flutes.
I make various flutes. I make a transverse flute, blows like a modern flute. And I make a Native American style flute. These are the ones I've concentrated on this year. I haven't been happy with these, but this year they came out very nicely. And I'm also a whistlesmith.
And this is a little clay whistle?
Yes, it's a little clay whistle, and this is the little planet one. It looks
it's round. It's about the size. It can fit in your palm.
Mm-hmm.
It's a face.
And it comes on a cord, so you can wear it, and the face shows, and then you pick it up to play it.
And can you whistle a little?
Sure.
Bit?
Okay.
Couple will demonstrate and provide lessons to the public for free this weekend. In fact, Lorna and Craig, 6 years ago, decided to invite other artists to open their studios to the public to immerse visitors in their creative process, which ended up as the annual Eureka Springs Artists Studio Tour.
We want you to see how the brush strokes are laid on the canvas. We want you to see how the clay is pulled from a lump into a wonderful vessel. We want you to understand what a torch and a welder can put together. The tour's terrific.
16 artists altogether will be available all weekend from 10 a.m. until 6 p.m. on this self-guided studio tour. Right down the road, you can visit with muralist and oil painter Larry Mansker. And from there, pop in to see jeweler Chan Stanley. South of town are the paintings and metalwork of Rich and Janet Goodyear, pottery painting and sculpture by Sarah and Terry Russell, assemblage by Maureen Daly, and etchings, paintings, and sculpture by Diana and Bob Harvey. Lots of creative couples. Mystical realist painter Cynthia Ray Robbins Studios in the quaint carriage house on a narrow Eureka Street uptown. And adjacent to historic Crescent Hotel, talented pastel artist Rebecca Becker, who operates the Prospect Gallery, showing the work of two other artists because their studios are too remote. Multimedia imagery by retired Hollywood animator Drew Gentle, and lyrical figure drawings and impressionist acrylic paintings by Carol Sari. She attended the Parsons School of Design and has lived all over the country before moving here in 2005. During the tour, she'll be painting Hindu religious figures on canvas.
Right now, I'm doing very small paintings of a Lord Nataraj and a Saraswati and a Lakshmi figure. And I do these from time to time, so this is the latest batch.
And Prospect Gallery owner, who's also a former Chicago Art Institute instructor, Rebecca Becker, will be on hand drawing photorealistic and very lush pastels.
And Carol, sorry, Drew Gentle and I will all be here, all having setups, working, painting, and can't wait to see everybody pouring in the door and being blown away by all of our work and the rest of the work in the gallery. So, also getting to peek inside an 1887 Victorian home, which is the setting for the gallery, and I think the most stunning views inside and out in Eureka Springs.
Another fine view can be seen from inside the beautiful 5,000-square-foot craftsman-style home perched on Lookout Point, overlooking Grotto Spring Reservation, recently built by Susan and Jim Nelson. They operate the popular Nelson Leather Company, Crazy Bone Gallery, and several apparel stores in town. But Jim, who has a master's in art from Syracuse University, is devoting less time to retailing and more time to studio art. He's very adept at painting and drawing, but has veered off into works on wood, scribing, painting it, and arranging large cut chunks into huge, colorful puzzles. His studio is in the lower level of their home.
Outside, beneath the porch.
Beneath the screen porch. And I can make a big mess out here, and it's fine, and it just gets, use the leaf blower and blow all the sawdust away and sweep it, and Susan can't hold it against me, usually. The bigger pieces usually are drawn, and then I use the drawings as references to build them. Smaller ones, I'll just make a whole bunch of pieces and then lay them all out on the floor and start putting them together in little puzzles that I like, compositions that please me, my eye, even though there was no original intent, you know, there was no big plan for the smaller ones. They just kind of are more improvisational.
These are not sculpture. These are constructed high-relief wall hangings, like number 148, titled Don't Do Dat. It's a 2-by-5-foot-long image of stained glass, but painted on adjoined pieces of fir. He prefers to work in basswood, pine, western cedar, and maple, routing and carving in texture, sanding and applying multiple washes and layers of acrylic paint, then sealing all of it with wax. Finished compositions are large, some 8 feet tall.
It's a great process. It's lots of fun. Sometimes it's a struggle.
He shows the work in J.A. Nelson Gallery. That's his own gallery located above his store Crazy Bone in downtown Eureka Springs. But this weekend, you can see him at work in his home studio on commission.
And here's the sketches. Can everybody see these sketches? They're very good. So you can see you can see the texture. But I may not use those. Those are just suggestions of possible patterns that I can carve into the wood.
Jim says his wood compositions are abstract, but patrons often project.
Which is great. Leave it open. And I like there to be plenty of room for interpretation. They're big, huge wooden doodles that have been refined.
Hear the crickets. Some artists are able to conjugate the work, others not so much. And this is why you must see the work of J.A. Nelson and this wonderful collection of Eureka Springs artists on the 6th annual Adventure into Art Studio Tour. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Maps for the free self-guided tour and more information can be found online at EurekaSpringsStudioTour.com. Published brochures and maps have also been installed at the Eureka Springs Chamber of Commerce and the Trolley Depot that's located on Highway 62. The KUIF website giveaway and Pipeline Productions are giving away two sets of four-day passes plus general camping to the Harvest Music Festival October 13th through the 16th on Mulberry Mountain in Ozark. The drawing will be held Friday, September 30th, during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Registration and more information are available on the web at KUAF.com.
Tomorrow, a local nonprofit called One Community will host a new fundraising event called Arkansas Fest in Fayetteville. Diana Gonzalez-Worthen is co-founder of One Community and co-chair of Arkansas.
Arkansas Fest is an eclectic art and music festival to raise money for scholarships and to inspire community leaders. And so it's going to really help. This will be our first fundraiser, and we invite the whole public to come out, have fun at George's there on Dixon Street, and we look forward to seeing anyone that wants to come out. It'll be our little celebration there, and look forward to it.
One Community was founded in the fall of 2009, and Worthen says the organization basically encompasses the work that she and Al Papa Rap Lopez have been doing in the area for about 15 years.
Really helping within the school system, helping to build bridges between our new immigrant families that have moved into the area, and between school and community. And anyway, it's just been it's been a work in progress. We've been able to get some programs started within the schools, and so as we have done so, we've also been asked in other places, in other schools, and across the state. Well, you know, we could use something like that over here, and we could use something like that. You know, so it just really helped us to see the need for increasing some of these programs that engage parents in school, helping to build our next community leaders, you know, within our students. At the same time, seeing the assets and the gifts that our families bring to our area, and the rich diversity of our area in the state.
The day-long festival will be broken into two parts. From 2 to 6 Saturday afternoon, admission is free, and guests can visit booths outside of George's Majestic Lounge that feature more than 20 organizations, most of which are nonprofits.
People can learn about the different resources in the community that are available. Many of them will have multilingual brochures and so forth, so that we can reach all the population. And there'll be a children's area where children can, you know, see Mickey, Minnie, and Goofy, and they can see Bubbleen the Clown, and they can be in a big jumping machine, and there'll be popcorn and arts and crafts and things like that for the kids. And then we'll also have some performances outdoors from 2 to 6 as well, Marshallese dancers and St. James Church Steppers, and mimes. They have a little mime show as well. The En Fuego Zumba Ladies, and we'll have Miami Stream. They'll be doing a show as well. The mayor's going to be given a proclamation for Arkansas Fest at 2 o'clock, starting at the festival. And then DJ Torres and Papa Rap will have a little kid show ongoing throughout that 2 to 6 period of time.
At 6, the festivities will move inside of George's. There is a $10 donation at the door, and guests will be able to listen to 6 different bands who will be performing until 2 a.m. There will also be a salsa dance competition.
$20 per couple to enter, and we'll give first, second, and third place awards. And some of the bands that you'll get to hear are Club Miami Sound with DJ Z. You'll have Black Pearl, O.C. Fisher with Soulful Sound. You're going to have Gaia Soul, Insomnio. There'll also be adult karaoke. You'll have the Arkansas Band. And then you're going to have multiple DJs that some people may have heard or may not. La Maga, El Sherife, El Travieso, and of course DJ Z. And so it should be a lot of fun. And for the salsa dance contest, by the way, right before the salsa dance contest, there'll be salsa dance lessons. So it doesn't matter if you don't know how to dance salsa. You'll learn a few steps beforehand, and then if you're bold enough, you can go in and enter the salsa dance contest.
Arkansas Fest will take place from 2 p.m. Saturday until 2 a.m. Sunday at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville. Proceeds will help benefit scholarships and One Community programs. More information is available at onecommunityar.org.
This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, September 23rd, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Ann Smith Grajeda.
And with us in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Kevin Kinder, who is a features writer for Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
That's right.
Welcome
back.
Nice to
be here.
I don't think you've been here since spring.
That's right. No, we talked this summer about Wakarusa.
Right. That's right.
And
that's
you're
right.
Here to talk to us about our events because Becca is not here today.
Right.
That's right.
And you've picked out an event that's taking place in Alma.
That's right. It's this weekend, and it's September 24th at 8 p.m., September 25th at 2 p.m.
And that's Saturday and Sunday.
That's Saturday and Sunday. And this production is called Blast. And it is. It won the 2001 Tony Award for Theatrical Event of the Year when it came to Broadway. And what's happening is one of the national tours is actually debuting in Alma. And they've been staging it there for the last 2 weeks, rehearsing, getting ready, and they're launching the national tour from the Alma Performing Arts Center. So this is the first time that anybody's got to see this particular touring production of this Tony-winning show.
So the premiere is in Alma.
That's absolutely right. Now, this show has been on the road before, but with this cast and crew, this will be the first ever performance.
I was not familiar with Blast till I started reading about them coming to Alma, and it's like kind of like Stomp, kind of like...
And kind of like, I can't remember the name of that movie. I think it's called Drumline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where they, it's about the Drum Corps International Competition. This is actually a competition. And so it's lots of drums, lots of music. There's dance elements. And it's a lot, you know, it's really percussion-based. And that show is again, launching from here, which is a really great opportunity to see theater that no one else has, frankly.
Saturday and Sunday.
That's right.
At the Alma Performing Arts Center.
That's correct.
AlmaPAC.org, I believe,
yes,
is the
that's
website.
That's right.
All right. Kevin, thanks.
You're welcome.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
We're inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. We are with the Aerials, who are from my immediate left around the table, Pat Bear Griffith.
Yes.
Karen Fitzpatrick, David Burks, and Tony Walker. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Drove over from Eureka Springs.
Carpooled.
Yes.
Very green of them.
Yes. That means the band probably gets along. If you can fit into one car?
Yeah, for the most part.
Yep.
Yeah. For the most part.
For 27 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Three of you. Get along great when I'm not there.
Three of you have been together for a long time,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's three guys.
The fellas.
The fellas, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tony joined us.
22 years or something like
since 1978.
Wow.
Yeah, we started in 78. Tony joined us in 88.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the two of you... Mm-hmm. David and Pat, members. Founding members, yeah. Mm-hmm. Take us back to 1978. How did the stars align?
It was our songwriter, Brad Alley, who introduced me to Pat's little brother, John. And he played music and I played music, and we just kind of all got together at John's house and started making a lot of noise and having a lot of fun. And a while afterwards, Pat came into it, and over the first 10 years, we had various drummers and other guitar players and this, that, and the other thing, and it finally settled into me and Pat, and then Tony came in 10 years later, and then Karen came in 2001.
Yeah, and he didn't say, though, that Pat was always hanging around. So Pat just decided he better get a bass and play. Oh, yeah. And he said he bought one for $10 and joined the band.
The guy pulled it out of his closet.
You already knew how to play the bass.
Oh, no. No. I was kind of a late bloomer as a musician. I always tinkered around with a guitar and so on and so forth. And they needed a bass player. And so there we go.
We just kind of showed him some stuff between me and his little brother.
Yeah.
How long did you have stuff shown to you before you were on stage?
6 months, a year, something like that. Okay. I don't know.
6 months, a year, wasn't very long.
And Karen, you're now with the band, and the first CD, the Maxed Out CD, is the first CD with you on it.
Yes, yeah. They were playing as a group, and Tony and I had a different group going on, and called the Lunartics in Eureka Springs. And then I got pregnant with my first child and got so huge that I was ready to quit singing. But that was up to about maybe my eighth month. And then we were going to open for Levon Helm's daughter, Amy, the Barn Burners. And so Pat had to sit in as our bass player that night. I mean, David did. Yeah. Pat had already done it once, but David did. And then after that, when I said, oh, we're going to have to break up, Tony's wife, Lana, said, you should join the Aerials because they're already a group and you could sing with them. And if you can't be there because of a baby, they understand because they all have had their babies, you know. So I did. And I started sitting in with them and they started calling me Cameo because I would just show up and sing. Yeah. And then at their CD release party for All the Best Days, David said, all right, Cameo, you going to do this or not? Yeah. And so I joined the band, and we've been together for the last 10 years. So
has the name always been The Aerials?
Oh, no.
No?
We've had some fairly amusing incarnations.
Such as?
Wicked Zarkov and the Nuke the Universe Band. that was based on a story. Brad Alley, who was also a founding member of the band, who has passed away, but a greater wit you've never seen in your life. And he came up with this story about Wicked Zarkov, who was going to take over the world to get rid of rock and roll music. It was a great story. I wish we still had it, but unfortunately we lost some of that stuff. But anyway, that's how we became Wicked Zarkov and the Universe Band. We were originally, even before Pat came into it, when it was me and his little brother, we were Big E and the Totally Out of Control Orchestra. Fortunately, that died a very quick death. there was some other people that were with us that wasn't digging on the sound, man. So, you know, we moved on, became Steel Blue and
Tokyo Blues.
Tokyo Blues Band. Uh-huh. Just whenever a new member came in, you know, like 10 years before Tony came in, there was a lot of bouncing around there with people. And
so how did you end up on the Aerials?
Well, the Aerial was a motorcycle.
Oh, okay.
And then Pat and I are gearheads. And
so was Brad very much.
And so was Brad. And so was John, yeah. But we all rode motorcycles and like hot rod cars and stuff like this. And this old motorcycle was something that I personally liked real well. And I threw it out there one day and it was like, yeah, okay, why not? There really wasn't any great enthusiasm for it. It just kind of stuck.
Yeah.
And as time went on, it got harder and harder to unstick it, so we just kept it.
There you go.
Yeah. But there's a picture of the motorcycle in there somewhere.
It's on this.
In the liner notes or something. Yeah.
Oh, wow. You devote the whole gatefold there to it. Yeah.
Max elbowed that for us.
People, you know, the Aerials, they think it's an antenna or the girl from the Disney.
The Little Mermaid.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
You know, and but basically, it's about the neat old motorcycle that we liked.
Well, you like motorcycles so much, you've put a motorcycle on a song? I mean, it's one thing to have, you know, drums or horns or guitars or vocals. Yeah. But
Bike Blood was a song that Brad wrote about crashing your motorcycle. And we were trying to think something different to do with it. So the studio that we recorded at, we drug a couple of microphones and cables out to the side of the highway, which was quite a ways. It was
he kept having a lot of cords together. A
lot of cords, several 25-foot cables. And I brought my motorcycle over and went down the road and turned around and blazed it back up the road to catch that whole Doppler thing going on, you know, between the two microphones. And it turned out pretty cool, really. And the best part, though, if you listen real close, because it was outside, after my motorcycle went out of distance, you can hear the birds tweeting in the background there. And I always thought that was kind of cool. You know? Fortunately, we don't have to give royalties to birds.
You had a chick singer even back then?
Yeah. Yeah. We always like chick singers.
That song is from All the Best Days, the previous CD. You were not on that CD. Anytime you get a new member of the band, it changes something.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I wonder if having a female join the band changes things, not because guys and girls, but because it's a different kind of sound. You know, yeah. I mean, everybody Big Brother and the Holding Company is different with Janis Joplin than it was with Adam.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So how, well, did it open up new avenues?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, a bunch, yeah.
And we were getting pretty stale, really. And
we needed
some enthusiasm, and she brought that along and a new dynamic.
And I was able to sing some of their original stuff that they had never really done anything with. Well, they had, but they didn't really get happy with it. And then they gave it to me to see what it would sound like if I sang it. And so that's pretty fun for them. They would always stop and say, oh, if Brad could hear that, he'd love that.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So that was really fun. And then we've written some songs together as a group, too.
So a song like Slinky Dress would not have been part of the repertoire before?
No, I wrote that. Yeah. I wrote the words.
Yeah. Not really.
No. It would have been interesting to hear that from a man's
perspective. Yeah, probably not.
Yeah. Yeah, we
you
really don't roll that
ego
way. David could pull that off.
So you wrote it, Karen?
I wrote the words, and then I brought it to them, one of those stream of consciousness kinds of things that you just start and you don't change anything, you just plow it through and there's a song. And I brought it into them, but when I play guitar, I'm just pretty much like a boom chicka boom chicka. That's the only rhythm I know, so that's how the song was. And they thought, and we just left it alone for a long time. And then he was playing some kind of cool salsa samba thing one time, we're just over there just playing for fun. And then we took that song back out and went, yeah, that's what this is supposed to be. So it's kind of the anthem of the mother, the new mother.
Slinky little dress, and I must confess, I'm wearing it just for you.
Big doings this weekend.
Yes, the Eureka Palooza. I've been saying that a lot lately. I can say that word really well now. It's at Lake Leatherwood this Saturday. I am also the development director for Clear Springs School in Eureka Springs. And we're having this is one of our biggest fundraisers. And it's a fun fundraiser, but it's a lot of work. And we've got great bands lined up, and it's starting out with a trail race. So picture it, the band's going to be standing there waiting to start, and all the racers starting this 3.5 mile and this 10-mile race. They're all going to start with this one ring of the bell. So the racers will take off around the track at Lake Leatherwood, and they'll be able to hear Handmade Moments. The first group is this cool little trio from UCA. They're all music students. They're fantastic. Anna
Absolutely.
Horton. And they're going to play Jazz Weekend, too. They're fun. So the racers, you'll be able to hear them as they go around the track, and then up into the woods, they'll be able to hear the music for a long time. So I think it'll be dynamic.
It's easier to run with music.
Yeah, yeah, I hear.
That's just the beginning, though, of Eureka.
That's what I always say.
Yeah.
I run a lot.
Yeah, after Handmade Moments is Magic Mule and Dachshund and David Singleton Band, Rock House, Fossils of... Oh, then us, the Aerials, and then we've got our friend Brent Potey is sitting in with us on harmonica. He's fantastic. And then Fossils of Ancient Robots. And DJ Havoc, he's going to be playing in between all the songs and doing his laser LED light show thing. And he's a parent from school. Like, almost everybody that's playing is either a parent, all the band members, you know, somebody in each band either as a kid going to school there or something. So we all have connections, and I think it's going to be great.
And if someone is listening to this and they go, now, Clearis, what? What is this school?
It's a little independent school, nonprofit in Eureka Springs, really small, but we go pre-K through 12th grade. It's been around since 1974, and it's a hands-on, hearts-engaged educational environment. The kids are doing things all the time. They're out, they're camping, they're going traveling around, learning about the world we live in. And we're small, so we can do that, but every kid is on scholarship there. Every student is. So
this weekend helps with that,
Yes, it keeps our doors open and keeps us doing the things we do.
Eureka Palooza begins Saturday,
September 24th. Gates open at 11, noon until 8 o'clock the last band goes on. I'm not saying that well, but it's 11 to 11, let's put it that way.
Thank you all for coming
in.
Thank you.
Thanks
so much for having us.
The Arkansas Razorback volleyball team is back on the Barnhill Arena floor tonight for the first home match for the squad since the end of August. They're 9-4 overall, 1-1 in the SEC. Already this year, Arkansas has set a record for highest attendance for a single match in Fayetteville. And head coach Robert Palizza told me this morning, after 9 consecutive matches away from home, he's happy to be back in Fayetteville to face Mississippi State tonight. Since you and I last talked, 13 matches, 24 days since you've played inside. I know you've practiced there, but 24 days since you've been in a match on your home floor. That's got to feel pretty good to get back home.
Yeah, it's certainly significant. When you look at it that way, I mean, you're pretty much a month away from home. And it's certainly good to be back in Barnhill, in front of our fans, in front of our band, and just in our, you know, a little bit more of a comfort zone. So we're excited to be back. We went 7-2 in our stretch. Obviously, you always want to win them all, but 7-2 out of 9 matches in 24 days gone, it feels pretty good. So now we got to take care of business at home.
What do we know about Mississippi State?
They're a really hot team. I mean, I think they're the hottest team in the SEC right now. Both of their middles are playing great volleyball. They're very good behind the setter. So our left fronts are going to have their hands full blocking tonight. And they have one of the best attackers in the country, and Caitlin Rance, their outside hitter. So we're going to have our hands full with her. And we're just going to have to play a lot of defense and serve the ball well, and hopefully that will take care of business.
Someone's listening to this. They're going to the match tonight. Maybe they don't have as intricate a knowledge. Well, as a coach or they're relatively new to volleyball, what's one thing they should look at tonight's match to kind of give them an idea of how Arkansas is doing?
They got to take a look at our serve and passing. And I know that sounds very elementary, but that's a reality for our team right now. We're very physical. We'll get the points in our kills. We'll get all the points in our blocks. We're a very good serving team. If we're on serving and we're hitting our zones and not making many errors from the service line, that's certainly going to give us an advantage. And the other part is we have the physicality to attack, but we got to pass the ball for those attackers who have options. And so it's for us right now, it really is coming down to serve and passing. If we can do that tonight, I think we'll come out winning tonight.
Can I, as a layperson in the stands at Barnhill, know if those serves are hitting the zone? Will I be able to tell?
You really won't be able to tell that much.
I can watch you, I suppose.
Correct. You can watch me and watch the zone a little bit and see if they hit it. But the biggest thing is just the service errors. If you're hitting more than 3 servings errors per set, you know, you hit 3 service errors, you're starting to walk a fine line per set. If you have more than 3 service errors per set, you're starting to struggle, and you're really giving the other team an advantage. So as a fan, you can just look from the stands and count those serve. More than 3, you can start heckling a little bit and tell us to put us on the court.
Well, best of luck tonight, and we'll talk to you as the season progresses.
Well, thanks, and thanks for listening. Go Hawks!
Robert Palizza is the head coach for the Arkansas Razorback volleyball team. They play Mississippi State tonight at 7 at Barnhill Arena on the University of Arkansas campus.
It's the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 23rd of September, 2011. It's the birthday of the blogger Anna Marie Cox, born in Puerto Rico in 1974, the founding editor of Wonquette, a blog about Washington politics, who left the site, she did, in 2006 on publication of her novel Dog Days, the story of a woman who founded a blog about Washington politics. It's the birthday of the poet Yaroslav Seifert, the only Czech to receive the Nobel Prize in Literature, born in a suburb of Prague in 1901, came from a working-class family, became a journalist and a poet, was a devoted communist when the party first formed after World War I. But as a poet, he represented the poetist movement, which believed that art had no function other than art itself. He objected to the Bolshevik sympathies of the Communist Party in Czechoslovakia, for which he was expelled from the Communist Party. And 2 years later, 1950, a collection of his poems expressing his disillusionment with communism was censured. He survived the Nazi occupation, the Stalinist regime, communist oppression, continued writing and collecting cactus plants until he died in 1986. It's the birthday of the author of The Scarlet Pimpernel, the Baroness Emushka Orczy, born at her family's estate in Hungary, 1865, part of the landed nobility, a novel about a swashbuckling Englishman, Sir Percy Blakeney, who helped his aristocratic brethren in France escape during the French Revolution. It's the birthday of the Roman Emperor Caesar Augustus, born in 63 BC, the great nephew of Julius Caesar, who became Caesar's heir upon his assassination. Augustus, widely respected during his reign, he did good works. He started the first police and firefighting services. He distributed funds for soldiers and veterans, restored temples of Roman deities. The month of August is named in his honor. And it's the birthday of the Mongol Emperor Kublai Khan, born somewhere in Mongolia in 1215, who ruled over most of modern-day Mongolia and China. Marco Polo met Kublai Khan when he traveled from Venice to Mongolia and stayed 17 years there, learned the language, served in Kublai Khan's administration. And from Marco Polo's accounts, we know that Kublai Khan fathered 22 sons by his four wives and 25 sons with other women, and presumably many daughters as well. Here's a poem for today by Linda Paston, Unveiling. In the cemetery, a mile away from where we used to live, my aunts and mother, my father and uncles lie in two long rows, almost the way they used to sit around the long planked table at family dinners. And walking beside the graves today, down one straight path and up the next, I don't feel sad exactly, just left out a bit, as if they kept from me the kind of grown-up secret they used to share back then, something I'm not quite ready yet to learn. Linda Paston's poem Unveiling from Carnival Evening, New and Selected Poems, 1968 to 1998, published by W.W. Norton and Company and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, partners with the National Endowment for the Arts in Poetry Out Loud, a national poetry recitation contest for high school students. More information at poetryfoundation.org. Written by Heather McPherson. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for Ozarks at Large and KUAF comes from Rogers Historical Museum and Quilting a Memory, Friendship and Commemorative Quilts. This exhibition of quilts from the late 1800s into the 1900s will be accompanied by a hands-on activity for both children and adults. This exhibition will come to a close November 19th, 621-1154, or rogersarkansas.com/museum for more information.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Rockhouse.
And Rockhouse is?
It's northeast of Clifty.
Oh, okay, Clifty, mm-hmm. Birthplace of Archie Vaughn.
Okay.
All right. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Have a great weekend.